I'm Mark Hennick. This is So-Called Normal. Hey folks, welcome to So-Called Normal. I'm Mark Hennick. Today on the show we have Alexandria Santaguida, the only Alexandria, theonlyalexandria.com. This was a really unexpected conversation for me. I've encountered Alexandria a number of times through the TED community, the TEDx community, performing at events. She's a singer, a sound healer, and that's why I wanted to have her on the show, because I'm certain I'd never had a sound healer on the show yet. In fact, I don't think I've ever even talked to one before. So we spend a bit of time talking about her music and her performance, the art of performance, but then also her use of crystal singing bowls and how she's used that to heal herself too, I think, and now certainly has been using it to help others heal. So it was unexpected for me because it's not an area that I really know anything about, but that's been my challenge with this podcast right from the very beginning, has been to say, you show me anything and I'll find the angle, the mental health angle, the resilience angle, and that really came out strongly in this one too. So here's my conversation with Alexandria Santaguida. Go check her out at theonlyalexandria.com on So-Called Normal.
My name is Alexandria Santaguida. I have my roots in music. So I started off over a decade ago in music as a singer. I actually left my traditional school studies at University of McGill. I left there to pursue what I was discovering about myself, which was this passion for music. Mm-hmm. And
what were you studying at the time?
Political science.
Oh, that's an interesting pivot.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'd gone through a really big life change at the time, and I was about 19 and hit one of my first rock bottoms, but probably the rock bottom that made the biggest change for me so far. Mm. And what it led me to was this desire to do what made me happy. Mm. And so I sought that out. And so at first it started off with attending continuous, numerous yoga classes, reading every book you can imagine about yoga, the Tibetan Book of the Living and the Dead, all those things in the realm of bettering self and how to get going in that. And so I read every book you could imagine and got a bit into meditation and finally decided I wanted to learn more about music. Mm-hmm. And I'd sang my whole life, but that year in particular at school, I had met some really amazing friends in some of the electives I was taking, which upon reflection, all my electives were in music. Okay. So it was music history, music business, music marketing, music theory, choir.
And had you come from a music background previously? Or
no, I took choir in grade school.
Yeah,
I did play a little bit of violin when I was young, but hadn't touched it since I was 12. Mm. I've been very musical and I've been a dancer my whole life, so I was very much a performer. Mm-hmm. But I never really pursued music deeply, never really fell into music singing classes that I enjoyed, so I never continued with that. Mm. And yet I found myself singing through university and making friends in the music program who then asked me in my second year there to record with them, which I guess was part of the snowball effect along with the rock bottom, because what that did was I'd recorded for the very first time in my life.
Right, sure. And you must have been obviously pretty good if they're inviting you onto their recording, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what, you know, I can't remember what the intention or purpose was. Right. I think it was more to play and discover.
Sure.
And it was just in his apartment and he had a USB mic and he was really skilled with instruments and composition. That was his thing. And so I was always writing. So I'd always written lyrics since I was probably fourth grade.
Oh, wow.
And used to enter poetry contests and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, never really put them to life or made them something real. I just have notebooks of lyrics.
Of lyrics, yeah.
As I would go through, I ended up recording four different songs that year. Three were covers, and one was an original that we ended up doing as the last piece. Mm-hmm. And he taught me everything from how to layer my voice, what a harmony was, and he was all my first recording experience, just a USB mic in an apartment in Montreal.
Yeah. So what kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, I didn't know at the time, but what I was doing was I was emailing home each song. So I would send them to my sisters and my mom and dad and be like, look at this cool thing I did here. Mm. And just, you know, send it over. I didn't really, it was a little weird to hear myself, you know, hear yourself singing. And if I even listen back now, so many years later, I can hear how young my voice was and how much it's developed and changed. Mm-hmm. And really, yeah, you know, wasn't bad for first ever recording, no real vocal lessons, yeah. No knowledge on the thing.
Well, but. And that's how I first encountered you as well. You were singing at either it was a TED-related event or the whole TED community kind of, you know, there's a lot of different stuff that plays into that, and that's where I first heard you.
Yeah, I think 2015, I sang their after party.
Right.
And 2016, that was probably it, yeah. I did a sound bath.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we probably saw each other twice.
Yeah. And you did something for a mutual friend of ours as well, Andrea.
Yes.
Did an event for her.
Yes, yeah, her Talk Boutique event. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you've been around for a while doing this.
Yeah, I have. So anyway, yeah, I guess it ended up changing my life in more ways than I could have imagined just by going to explore with a USB mic because my whole life changed after that year. Right. I left school. I came back to Toronto. I went to a music studio for the first time in my life, started working with producers, wrote songs to people's produced records, and like started pumping out song after song after song after song and just like became a machine.
So what was happening for you though? But like, you know, to take off like that, to finally find your passion and take off like that, but what was happening for you in that rock bottom, as you called it, that made you so, it seems, desperate to get out of that place in your life?
It feels like a totally different human.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a dark experience. I was definitely in suffering from depression, very suicidal, and also anorexic and bulimic at the time. Mm. So I was going through a lot of different things in the mental realm. Mm-hmm. And so the two things that I say actually saved me were music and yoga and meditation and wellness. Mm-hmm. And had I not made the decision to move back to Toronto, I don't know where I would have ended up. Because I was going through so much there and I didn't know how to get myself out of it in a productive, quick enough way. Mm. So what I ended up doing upon my move back to Toronto was I actually asked my mother for help. So I actually told her I needed a therapist. Mm-hmm. And that was a big deal, being 19,
sure.
You know, having your pride and not really knowing how to ask for help.
Right. And how did your mother respond to that?
Well, I'm really lucky that my mother at the time was actually in a program for spiritual psychotherapy at TAC in Toronto, which is Transformational Arts College. Mm-hmm. And so she was very familiar with different practices. She had exposed me to things like Reiki from very young. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if I asked her, she would have somebody in her school that she could at least get the ball rolling with me.
Right.
You know, so she referred me to one woman from her program. Not that was in training, but had already been a graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And went to her for a few sessions, and I didn't quite resonate. And so we had tried someone else. And I actually really resonated with her.
Mm.
And I probably worked with her for over a year.
Oh. And do you remember what kind of therapy you were doing with her? Or kind of an eclectic approach?
It was kind of like life coaching and therapy in a sense of, she'd help me, the way I describe it is she'd help me work through my thoughts.
Sure.
Help me work through my mind
right.
and what was happening in those moments. And as my needs shifted over maybe the year and a half, let's say, what we worked on was different and the style changed to kind of meet the needs that I had.
And did you notice, were you still writing during this time as well that you were in therapy?
It's hard for me to remember, which is funny. But I'm going to say that from my experience with myself, what I know happens is when I'm going through something really intense emotionally, the emotion actually takes over.
Right.
And so my ability to write in that moment is not really.
That's interesting. I wonder what comes first. The not expressing yourself through writing, because that seems like it's often a great coping mechanism for people to be able to express themselves in that way, or if there's something else happening that's preventing you from writing. I guess I'm wondering which might be happening first.
Well, what I have found is that the writing always comes after the peak of the emotion
starts
to come down.
Almost like the release of it, maybe.
Yes. And then I'm still processing the emotion. The emotion's not gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the writing helps the processing.
Yeah.
And I often don't always write. Often I sing. So I'll just like hit record on my phone and just like walk around singing.
Okay.
And that's a big release for me because it's a form of writing. And if I like it later, I just transcribe
it.
Yeah, sure.
Have you noticed a difference? I don't know if you went back and looked at the old stuff, that original stuff that you've done versus what you do now.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a change?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Other
than vocally, I mean, in terms of content.
Well, strictly content, it's definitely gone from like teen angst and anger and, and the why to more finding the light in the darkness and creating the uplifting moments because that's what shifts my energy. And when you're putting music out or you're even putting energy out, it's important to be mindful of that and what the end is. Well, we all know music creates release for us. And part of the journey through one song is often creating the tension and bringing you to release.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is life too. There's tension, release. And it's funny because I've seen the shift of my music, just content-wise, shifting from like just this pain and sorrowful space, which is real too and needs to be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not where I live anymore as a conscious being.
Right.
I can go there and I can feel that way when things happen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the tools and the skill set now to bring myself back to that peaceful state much more easefully.
Yeah, yeah. Now that you've done it, the road isn't as foreign now that you know the route. Are you still able to sing, or I don't know if you still do perform your original pieces, but do you think it's, even if you did, are you still able to perform them in the same way?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I do, to give you context.
I love people's process, so this is great. Yeah.
Yes, this is my process. So there's a song I wrote and released in 2015. It's called Stay. And the music video that goes with it is quite powerful. And I connect myself to a feeling.
Mm.
And so before I go on stage, and if that's the song I open with, let's say, I'm in character.
Mm.
So it's often like acting, in a sense. So I connect myself to that feeling and the emotion that I want to portray through voice and movement and face as I share the song with you, because all of that also affects what emotions are evoked from you.
Right.
And because live performance is so special, because there is a real energy exchange happening in real time, what I emit, you receive, and vice versa. And so I put myself in that space of feeling that emotion of the song and where its initial meaning came from or what message I want it to carry out. And I embody it. And there are times where I almost cry at the end of that song every time I perform it because the emotion is so vividly moving through me. And people feel it.
I can relate to that so much, you know, and especially around the piece where you say acting. And this is, I'm still trying to figure out what exactly this means, but I don't sing. But when I go up and I do consider it a performance in many ways and share my own stories of struggle, and especially around my own thoughts of suicide and depression and the difficulty that I had as a teenager, I'm able to access that as well. And I've often thought of it as almost a method acting where you dip back into it, so you're there. But then you do develop a skill to be able to step back out again and go on with your life. Sometimes it's interesting to, you know, the people who are there with you because you're so present in doing it. I've had people who have been concerned for me when I share that story. It's like, no, it's okay. I do this a lot. It's all right.
Yeah.
But I've struggled with sometimes feeling or wondering if that makes me inauthentic for being able to essentially act that emotion, but knowing that I don't live there anymore, or if it's a temporary revisiting, I suppose, as you frame it.
Well, I think for me at least, when I'm in that song, I'm in the song.
Yeah.
And everything about what I'm expressing and sharing is authentic and real.
Yeah.
I may not be living in that space in my conscious day-to-day, but in that moment what's being evoked is real.
Yeah, and that almost—that's a helpful way to frame it for me, because I don't think I've been able to put those kinds of words to it before. That it is real. That you know it's real. You feel it. That you're there again.
And it was a genuine experience.
Absolutely. And I don't think you have to be such an absolute purist in some ways, like the blues purists who say that you have to be actively struggling all the time in order to create blues. Well, no, I don't think that's actually true. As long as you can access the core emotion, I think it's still true.
And that's one of the biggest skills, actually, that I have when it comes to writing now. So I could easily today write a very emotional heartbreak song, though I'm not experiencing that right now.
Yeah, and
but I've been through it.
Sure, and I was going to ask you that now that you have that in your toolbox, you can pull it out in lots of different contexts.
Absolutely, that's as a songwriter, I write tons of types of music, whether it be ballads, pop songs, house music, rap bars. I've done it all, and the only way you can really do that is if you can transport yourself in your mind and in your body to either a past experience or an experience you could relate to and feel that and write from there.
So how do you pull yourself out then? What's do you have a process for once you go into the water, getting yourself back out of the water again?
Well, I don't think I'm going that deep. At least not all the time.
Right. Because that's one of the dangers. If you're going to go back there in your mind, you can't get lost.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a place where I've processed a lot of my pains and traumas, not that I've processed all of them.
Sure.
And the ones that trigger me, I can use to my advantage too in those ways for writing and things like that. But I have enough self-awareness that I know if I'm going in too deep.
Right.
And if I am, honestly, for me, what's provided so much comfort along the journey has just been having my grounded practices. And so to give you just a small frame of what that might look like, when I go off to LA and I have a songwriting session, or if I'm going to do a show, whatever it is, I have mini rituals. And it's very, very short. And sometimes if the people in the space that I'm co-creating with are open to it, I might invite them to do it with me. It's literally just a smudge. I'll smudge the space with Palo Santo or sage. I'll set out some crystals in the area that maybe I'm doing work in, and just do a couple of deep breaths and kind of call in the divinity and creation to be with me so I can create from a pure space.
Yeah. Yeah, the importance of, they think of that ritual in not only the predictability of being able to create that safe space within ourselves, you know, cause even if the space isn't safe around us, if we can create a safe space in ourselves, that can help to unlock, I think, all of these emotions that we're trying to share with others. That's the whole goal, right?
That and it gives you as the creator something to ground on. So for me, it's more like, okay, now I'm in my body, now I'm comfortable, now I'm like rooted. Okay, let the magic happen.
In the last 18 months or 2 years or so, I've totally immersed myself in writing, and I pulled a U and I quit my job and followed my passions and all this stuff, and I was terrifying, of course.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I quickly discovered that pretty much the only place that I could write in the depth with which I needed to write was secluded at a Trappist monastery in the woods without Wi-Fi or cell phone connection or anything like that. And when I wrote the first draft of my book, it was a fascinating experience to pull up all this stuff that I had never thought about before, and then be able to say to myself, this is going to be triggering. I'm doing air quotes. You can't see that on the mic, but that this is going to, quote unquote, trigger me, but that's okay, because I know I'm grounded in a safe space, and that's why I'm here, is to let these emotions come in and then just see what happens with them, just play with them and see what kind of creativity it draws up in me.
Yeah, and I have a really big belief that we each go through our own journey of life, and we each have our own unique experiences. And a lot of what we experience happens to teach us and help us evolve. And some of us choose then to share it, like maybe you are, and maybe I am, in our own different ways, to empower and inspire and help others move through and release whatever they're going through. And it just becomes this beautiful cycle, because the healing and the layers never end. We're still evolving and growing together. But Some of us just are there to share and want to go deeper and find those triggers and learn to play with them and learn the layers in a different way with a new mindset.
Go ahead. I was about to cut you off, but
no. I was just gonna say, and you know probably as well as I do, it's not easy stuff.
No, it's certainly not. And I think, though, it's an endless well of creativity. That's where you have everything you need. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of getting past yourself and getting past the barriers that you're building around yourself for safety. I think just because you don't want to feel all that discomfort, and uncertainty, so we avoid it. Usually.
Yes, and I have a quote for that. It's my own.
Please share. Well, can't just leave us hanging.
I know. Well, it's just like, it's one of my beliefs, and it's just you have to feel to heal. And the only way through the healing is to really feel it. Yeah. Otherwise, the more we hide or keep it in or we resist, we actually keep it in the physical body and we allow it to go through a whole other cycle before it comes up again. Mm. And unless we just allow that feeling to live, when it comes up, you don't force it up. But when it arises, you see it, you play with it, you acknowledge it, you thank it, you love it. Mm. And if you're ready, you tell it, okay, I'm ready to let you go. Mm. But unless we do that, we keep it in the body and we allow it to stay for a whole other round.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's going to do something inside you anyway. It doesn't just... it doesn't just disappear on its own. Right? That's the funny thing about psychic content, I think.
Yeah.
So tell me about the live performance piece then. How does that play into your creativity or your, I consider you a storyteller in a very expressive form. So where does live performance come into that for you?
Well, it's been in transition over the years. So as you first met me, I was performing with a full band. I was singing more pop music that I'd written and maybe some variations of covers I'd done. And that music is still music I work on. So I still write all the time and I'm working on a full album for me to release so I can start performing my works again with more intention. Because I feel right now I just want to do more with intention. Mm. And I could be performing all the time. I could be, you know, singing at weddings. I could be doing all these things. I could be sharing the years of songs I already have written. Mm. But for me, it's like, well, what's the intention and what am I doing with this music when I share it with an audience?
Right.
And so, because that answer hasn't been defined yet, and I really want, so my intention is to really create a body of work that can be intentional when you hear it. So either when you listen to it online as a full piece or you get it through live music and it's powerful for you. I've shifted my sharing to something that you called earlier, which is sound healing. And so my two worlds that I mentioned earlier, which were music and wellness, they kind of collided back in 2012 is when I first started singing with the Crystal Singing Bowls, but I didn't buy my own set until 2016. So in 2016 is when it really kind of went boof for me, because having my own set meant I could be in many, many different places sharing that work. And so now my live performances are often using voice. So I sing and I channel. So I'm going into a state where I have my own little ritual before I start. You might not see it because I've guided you through meditation. Your eyes are closed and then I do my thing. And essentially I'm asking for the highest and best of everyone in the space. I'm calling on different energies and I'm moving my ego, so my own emotion, my own attachment, my own stuff out of the way so I can be almost like a clear vessel or a clear filter for the song to move through and be received and transmitted through. So I'm asking that I be shown what the space, the people in the space need, so my voice can give that to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so every experience that I share is actually pretty unique because the sounds that come out are very different. Mm-hmm. Although I will usually blend in a few old Sanskrit mantras and a few old sacred biblical words.
Ones that are significant for you that have stood out over the years?
You know, One of them is a mantra that signifies kind of the cycles of life.
Okay.
Satanama. And actually, there's a university that did a study on it. It's the only mantra, I believe, that has like a university study done. Mm-hmm. And that one I just love because it represents the cycles of life. Mm-hmm. And in the Kundalini lineage of yoga, using Sanskrit mantra is very powerful. And they call it the science of yoga mainly because there's ways in which the tongue will hit the palate to shift matter in the physical body. Mm. So it becomes very meditative for the person singing and chanting, mm-hmm. but also can be equally as powerful for the people receiving the words. Mm. You know, we always hear words, not words are powerful, but we know that like our thoughts are powerful. Mm-hmm. What we tell ourselves is powerful. Mm-hmm. And the words we choose are very important. Mm-hmm. And so equally, that intention is what I want for the pop music sure. I write and share, but also the tones and the energy and the vibration at which I show up as if I'm creating a sound healing experience. Mm.
There's a composer, a classical composer that I've listened to quite a bit over the years named Arvo Pärt. And he's, when asked about his music and the type of music that he creates, and again, it's classical, but he's notable for me because he uses a lot of empty space in his music, a lot of silence. He uses mm-hmm. silence as a note, essentially. And he likened his music to white light and that it's separated by the mind of the prism in the mind of the listener. Do you think part of stage performance I've learned over the years is realizing that you can only present what's true and authentic for you. You can't control how it's received necessarily by the audience member. And in fact, some of the worst speakers I've ever seen are the ones who try to over-control because they over-explain. They end up doing too much on behalf of the listener. How much do you see that at play in your audiences? Do you know when you're affecting people in the audience when they came and when they showed up in every sense of the word and are receiving your music in the way that you intend?
Well, in which context? Actually
either. So it sounds like the channeling is probably more likely to do this. Well, I don't know, actually. Maybe that's just my own interpretation of it. But what do you think affects people more personally?
What I feel is that it so depends on the, I'm going to call it facilitator, but the performer, mm-hmm. right? And the container that they're holding. So, you know, you might not be sharing the most amazing content at a live speaking engagement,
sure.
but your energy might exude something that right. inspires someone or gets their emotional guard down so they're vulnerable enough to hear something that grabs them or is meaningful. Mm. And so in one sense, I feel that the energy in which the performer carries plays a humongous role. Because that space, so as a performer, no matter what you're performing in, even if you're a yoga teacher, you're performing.
Sure.
You are responsible for holding space and therefore responsible for guiding the energy of the room. Mm. And so if you show up with a certain energy and you're carrying a certain energy mm-hmm. and you have a beautiful intention and your ego is out of the way and your fear is out of the way and your stuff's out of the way, your heart now is what people can feel. And that's what people want, is they want connection. And yes, the content matters and yeah, is the song good or is it bad, whatever. But if you're connected, you already have such a deep part of the experience for
right.
a person.
Right.
And then if you're sharing amazing content that is like, and you're an amazing speaker or you're a great teacher or, you know, you're an amazing vocalist and performer and you're engaging in those ways, then you're incredible, right?
Right.
But I find today there's so much of that first piece missing. Mm. There's so much of that missing heart connection that the performers aren't carrying.
Right. Yeah, and you're putting so much color and definition to things that I've never really had words to explain before. But, you know, there's this idea, and I think most performers have experienced this, where you go into a room and you do your thing or whatever, and you feel either that it was okay, that it was really scattered and kind of all over the place, or that you were really in flow with the audience, you were really in sync with them. And I don't think I've ever been able to really put my finger on what the difference is. And I think I have a habit of blaming the audience when really it was probably me all along, right? If I wasn't able to show up for them.
Well, and it is an exchange. But as the performer, as the guide of the experience, it's on you to move the energy. Mm. You know, I have had a lot of experiences where I'm sitting there and I'm playing the Singing Bowls and I'm just like, I just went flat on one note and I'm judging myself.
Sure.
And like, no one knows or notices, okay? Or I'm like performing on a big stage and, you know, I had a cold that morning and so I'm all nasally and nobody knows.
No.
But I'm my worst critic, right? And I get off stage and people are coming up to me and they're like, that was the best part of the whole day. And I'm like, whoa. Really?
So the first time I saw the Singing Bowls, but you used another term for them earlier, Crystal
Singing Bowls.
Crystal, oh, okay. Crystal Singing Bowls. The first time I've ever seen those in my life was at one of those TED events on stage, and there was a lot of them. How many did you have?
More than seven.
Oh, I feel like it was more than that. Anyway,
it's probably 11 or 12.
So in my memory, there's like 50, but
not quite that many.
So there, you made a big impact on me, apparently. But I remember that was the first time in my life that I'd ever seen it before. So tell me more about that instrument, I suppose, mm-hmm. that you're using.
Yeah. The crystal singing bowls, they're basically a crystal version of the Tibetan bowls, which are brass. But the crystal singing bowls are made out of pure crystal quartz. Mm-hmm. And there are so many variations of types of bowls you can get. The most common set of bowls, the bowls that I have and most practitioners have, are a chakra set. And so with that, there's seven bowls. And each bowl actually is tuned to a note of the musical scale, mm-hmm. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Mm-hmm. And each one of those bowls and notes actually correlates to a chakra point up the column. So for anyone listening that maybe has heard of the word chakra and doesn't really know what it is, chakra, all it means is energy center. We have hundreds in the body, hundreds on the outside of the body, but you might have seen the images of the ones of colorful ones going up
sure.
the spine.
Yeah.
And those are just the biggest gatherings of energy points in the body where a lot of our energy seems to gather and just stay. And so each one of those bowls actually will resonate with a different chakra in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of people going through their first sound experience, you know, there's a lot of different physical things that might happen. Some people might feel like tingles or a shiver up their spine. Others might get a sensation at a different point in the body when a certain note's playing. Some people might get really sleepy and fall asleep.
Mm.
Other people might see colors. Some people see images like a movie happening in their mind.
Interesting.
Some people feel like they've left their body. Others feel energized and inspired. It's really, some people get emotional. Some people
sure.
cry in my classes.
Sure.
In my experiences, and it's everything is normal. There's no right, there's no wrong. Each person has a very unique and distinct experience from one from the next.
Mm-hmm.
And each time you experience a sound bath, we like to call them sound baths.
And this is what the performance is called with the bowls.
Yeah, people call it different things. It might just be like a sound healing meditation, might be just sound healing. Most often call them sound baths
mm-hmm.
because you're being bathed with sound. And literally, like, the crystal singing bowls create such loud and deep vibrations. You don't know where the sound's coming from. People think I'm walking around or people think I'm doing all these things during a session during an experience. And it's like, no, I'm just sitting right here.
Right.
Sitting right here with the bowls, not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But so basically those bowls are also tuned to a frequency. There's a few frequencies that you can get them tuned to. The ones that I play with are tuned to a frequency of 432 hertz,
mm-hmm.
which is lower than the frequency that you'd hear on the radio and that we're most exposed to. And it works directly with the chakra system. So again, it's working with the physical body right down to your cells. And it's helping the body get into a state of relaxation, of rest, of peacefulness. So not that we're medically saying anything, but what it people have shared mm-hmm. after experiences is they're feeling relaxed. Mm. They're ready for sleep. I've had people after sessions tell me they've slept for the first time in years. Mm. And it's a testament to the power of the sound and frequency, also to the energy, and also the person's willingness to go there
yeah.
and to receive that and be ready for that, right. you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
there's a lot in play when you're working with your own development and your own, you know, healing.
Sure. Now and this is it. So is this the nature of the healing, or what is it that we have to heal, I guess? What is being healed by the sound?
Well, there's no defining that. Mm. It's really what you have going on and what you need in your moment that day.
Mm.
Because you might show up a week later for a sound bath and find that something completely new comes up for you.
Right.
Or you might get in there and set an intention, because we'll usually set an intention at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you might get to the end and be like, well, that's not what I needed. What I actually needed was this.
Right.
But even maybe that bit of clarity is what you needed.
Right.
And so there's no really defining what's the healing, what do people need to be healed by, because everyone's on their own journey and everyone's got their own process. But I say that if you are looking for meditation, and we know science has proved through many studies that meditation benefits us, whether it be for focus or productivity or expanding our memory, whatever it is, there's tons that shows meditation is very beneficial for our brains and our bodies.
Mm.
And this type of work, sound healing, sound baths, sound meditation, it's a form of meditation.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I love this form, not just because it's music and I love music. I do love it because of that. But it's a really easy way to segue people into a meditative practice, because it's, for me, one of the easiest ways to drop in. All you need to do is be there and listen.
Mm.
All you need to do is lie down, close your eyes, and listen. There's no pressure. You don't have to feel like you're doing anything right or wrong. There is no right or wrong, not with any form of meditation. But really, all you have to do is be there and listen. Nothing's required of you.
Mm. Now, would you say that sound bathing, like I really quite like that,
that
term. I do. Like forest bathing.
Yeah, it's totally the same.
Would you say that it, like meditation, like yoga, that it's a practice, that it takes a while to, that it gets easier or harder or whatever, anything?
It definitely
time?
Gets easier. Mm. So it's a very, so people's first experiences can vary just depending on where they're at on their journey, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for some people, it's so much easier than a guided meditation or trying to learn meditation.
Mm.
A lot of people love going to that experience because for them, it's an easier way to get to a meditative state without having to try or think so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are others who I've had who love the sound, and because the sound is so powerful, and physically you can feel it. Like, you can really feel the power of the sound working with your body when you're there in person.
Mm-hmm.
They'd like that, and it helped them get to a restful, peaceful state, because either way you're working with vibration and frequency. But they're like, my mind was running and I want to do it again so I can keep letting myself relax. And, you know, there is an optimal time to be doing this for. Like, I would say you'd want to experience it for more than 40 minutes.
Okay.
Because, you know, our minds will constantly try to trap us.
Right.
Especially with a new experience.
Tell me
especially
about it.
If you have an expectation.
Yeah.
If you have an expectation going into anything, being like, well, I'm supposed to feel relaxed.
Right.
And you go in there and you're like, well, I'm not relaxed and my mind is going and I'm thinking about what I have to do next. And your mind will set you up. And so sometimes it's just going in there, having no expectation, just trying something for the sake of it being new and fun, and seeing what happens. And if you can't do that, because it's hard, and I know it's hard for me too, expectations, you know.
But even if all you learn from it, I shouldn't say all because it's pretty significant, is that you're judgmental and that you're not able to let your guard down. Well, that's a pretty important lesson, I think. That's something that you would want to know about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right? But the good thing is that yes, like yoga and meditation, if you choose to go more, and if for whatever reason, I always say, like, if you're drawn to it, follow that.
Yeah.
So if you go once and you're like, yeah, I really like this, my mind wasn't as quiet as I would have liked, come again.
Mm.
Keep going, because you're going to get to new layers of yourself and, like you said, discover new about yourself.
Yeah.
And that's priceless.
Yeah.
If we can continue learning and going deeper with ourselves, we just end up learning and going deeper with the world around us,
yeah.
the people in our lives, you know, nurturing ourselves, nurturing the planet, like being aware really gives you a much juicier experience of life.
Mm. Yeah, it amplifies everything around you, I find, mm-hmm. when you're not as... Well, you know, we look through the haze of our busyness and our distractions and distortions of the world all the time. But if you can actually experience the world unfiltered, or at least differently filtered, it can be a pretty incredible experience,
mm-hmm.
even if for no other reason than it's different from what you're used to.
Yeah. Right?
Now, mindfulness and wellness, but especially mindfulness, has become very popular in a corporate sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been commodified in many ways, and I think a lot has been lost in that respect. So, how do you define mindfulness? What does that mean for you?
Well, I mean, mindfulness really does mean, in a sense, just being aware, having awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we're like, oh, be mindful of the world around you, be present.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't really be present if you're not aware.
Right.
And so, you know, everyone's telling you about living in the moment and being present. But if you're not aware of how you're feeling and what your body needs or like where you're at, how can you be present?
Mm-hmm.
How can you live fully?
Mm-hmm.
When you don't even know what you need. And so I think really the gem in mindfulness is it really goes down to self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much power and empowerment that comes with that.
Right.
Because when you are self-aware, you can make decisions from a space of clarity
mm-hmm.
and not emotion. And so there's this beautiful thing that happens when we get triggered throughout our day-to-day. And you have a choice. When something happens, to either react or respond.
Mm-hmm.
And that beauty of having a mindfulness practice is it gives you that opportunity to be like, huh, I could react right now.
Mm. And instead maybe of just being a slave to yourself.
Like the old me might have just like been triggered and had a reaction based on something that happened and has been with me my whole life now. Or, oh, I'm aware of that feeling and maybe it's coming up and maybe I don't do it the first five times.
Right.
But by the fifth time that I'm aware of it, I choose to take a deep breath and I choose to just respond.
Mm.
And my emotion actually filters out through that breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the most powerful tools I've experienced with mindfulness is my breath.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, thank you, breath.
It has this funny way of releasing so much, especially at very tense moments, right? Be able to pause and breathe.
It's almost a natural thing. If you have a dog, you might notice sometimes they just... take a deep breath here and there, and it's actually like an energetic release and mm-hmm. a stress release off the body. And so it's a very natural thing we do, and we breathe constantly all day long
mm-hmm.
without thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine this, like, you know, in yoga we call it prana, we call it life force.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine we had enough mindful practice to cultivate the breath as our biggest teacher and become our tool for awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because in yoga, we believe breath is your biggest teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And body is also your biggest teacher. Your breath mm-hmm. and body will give you the cues you need to actually navigate. The trouble is, with all the stuff going on in our lives, we're so disconnected from what we're feeling,
mm-hmm.
what we're needing, even what our body wants to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's very autopilot, and autopilot's actually direct opposite of mindfulness
yeah.
and awareness, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
yeah.
it's like, how do we go from autopilot to aware?
I saw a really wonderful speaker several years ago. I think he was just, or I shouldn't say just, because it really had quite an impact on me, but he was a corporate trainer doing, you know, when I was part of the corporate world, just doing a relatively mundane training. But something that he did was that every time he would tell a story or an anecdote of some kind, he would the prompt was take a or deep breath, he would say, and that was the audience's prompt or the room's prompt to just pause and take a deep breath. And he would always do it after he told a story of some
mm-hmm.
kind. And the first time it seemed like, okay, this is kind of hokey, you know, he's a guy in a business suit who's teaching us about whatever it is, conflict management or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time it was like, okay, I guess that feels kind of good, but it still feels kind of awkward in this room of people and it doesn't feel very authentic yet. By the end, when he's doing his closing, he tells what ends up being a really impactful story about the power of human connection. And he ends it with to take a deep breath. And that's one of the most satisfying moments
mm-hmm.
that I've ever experienced as an audience member watching somebody perform like that.
Mm-hmm.
That it does take a minute to get used to it, that it's actually okay to breathe. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think we forget that.
Yeah.
That it's okay.
Yeah. And your breath is like, it's one of the main things I constantly call upon in my sound baths or yoga classes and even performances. Because as, like I said, like when you are a clear channel and you're holding space as the performer, you can feel the energy of the room. And you know how to move energy, and that's one of the ways you can help people move through the energy. Because we're so disconnected, sometimes we're not even aware that our body needs a deep breath. Because maybe a part of what he shared stirred up something from the past that you're not even present with the emotion yet because it hasn't surfaced, because it hasn't processed. But that breath helps release it anyways. And so I love that he did that and you got to experience that, because that's amazing.
Every now and then, I'm a big fan of the Calm app. I use that as my usual go-to app for mindfulness practice. And every now and then they post on Twitter just little reminders, stop scrolling here for a second or take a deep breath. And I do it. It's just reflexively, because I've done it so much, I guess. I do it. And you really see the contrast, especially when you're scrolling mindlessly, unaware through social media, and then something tells you to stop here for a minute and just rest. It's incredibly therapeutic, I think, in our busy lives.
I 100% agree. Yes, I love the breath.
I feel like I just entered into some kind of time warp with you, because I realize that we're pretty much out of time, but I want to give you, I know, because I didn't realize we were talking so long. Maybe you did, I don't know.
I did not.
Where can, I feel like, we could talk forever, but where can people learn more about the work that you're doing, the work that you've done, and new projects and events that you have coming up?
Yeah. So I'm really accessible online. I post actually a lot of that kind of stuff that you described, which is kind of, I call them brain breaks. So you take a break, midday, whatever. I post sound baths, inspirational quotes, and, you know, just some goodness for your day. So you can find me online on Instagram. Follow me at The Only Alexandria.
Ooh, The Only.
Yes,
the one and only.
Exactly. And my website's the same, theonlyalexandria.com. And I host a lot of really wonderful community events and experiences that bring people together with movement, meditation, and music. Mm-hmm. And that actually goes under my other brand, which is New Love.
N-U-L-O-V-E
Community is our Facebook and Instagram, so New Love.
Okay, and you do most of your events in and around Toronto, or you also mentioned LA as well?
Yeah, so we're Toronto, LA, and looking, 2020 expanding New York, Vancouver.
Amazing, that's great.
So yeah, you know, just trying to spread that love.
That new love.
That, exactly, giving you some new love. But yes, so yeah, just trying to grow that movement and add to people's experience and build community of like-minded people.
Well, wonderful. I'm so grateful for you, Alexandria, for coming in and sharing this with our audience. And I look forward to, I hope, being able to attend more of your events. I've seen a number of them come up that I haven't been able to go to, but I'm going to make a point of carving out time to go to one. I think that's the whole point after all, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, anytime you can make, it's a good one.
I would love to. Alexandria Santaguida. Got it.
Got it.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
That's it. That's my conversation with Alexandria Santaguida. Go check her out at theonlyalexandria.com and see and learn more about some of the work that she's been doing, especially with those crystal singing bowls. It really is. I saw it live for the first time, as you heard in the conversation, at a TEDx Toronto event probably 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was, when she did the opening performance, and or one of the opening performances. And it was haunting. It really is to feel that sound bath, as we talked about, to feel it wash over you is really quite a different experience. And approaching it with an open mind is really enlightening, I think. So go check that out. Listen to some of her work. I think you'll be really impressed, too. And you can find it, like I mentioned, at theonlyalexandria.com. While you're there on your internet browser, head over to markhenick.com, markhenick.com. You can learn more about me and the show and what I do. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere else. So head over to Apple Podcasts especially and subscribe. Scroll down to the bottom, leave us a star rating, leave us some thoughts on the show, and maybe more people that you want to hear. I've been talking to a lot of people on this, finding the mental health and resilience angle. So tell me more. Tell me more about who you want to hear from and the types of things you want to hear, and we'll try to make it happen for you. And you can do that there. You can also tell me about your thoughts on the show on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, everywhere else. Most places I'm at Mark Henick, at MarkHenick. So go have a conversation with me. I'm not hard to find on any of those social media platforms. Okay, that's it for me. I'm out of here. We'll talk to you again next Monday on So-Called Normal.